on the zone.
212-279-3400. Give us a call and pledge to WBAI Radio. Folks, we're still at 2,800. You got to take us over 3,000. Come on, there must be someone out there who says yes to WBAI, who says, I'll help you meet your goal. We've got to get out of here. With 3 minutes over, please be the one to take us over the top. $200 pledge, folks. $200 pledge. Maybe there's a woman out there who appreciates our coverage of the income gap, of the disparity between wealth and poverty in this country. 212-279-3400. Now, I know overall women don't have half the wealth of men, but maybe you can pledge whatever you can. 212-279-3400, or pledge in honor of a woman you respect. Give us a call. Pledge to WBAI Radio. We're here for you. We are yours. We are WBAI Community Radio. We're going to get out of here right now. Thank you very much to the four people calling in, and to Dred Scott Keys, our engineer, and to Dave Clark, and to Andrea Silva, and to everyone who's helped with the news. 212-279-3400 is our number. We're at $3,200, moving our way up. Thank you very much to that person calling in. I hope another and another and another person will join. 212-279-3400 is our number. It's our lifeline, and you can reach out to us and say, I support you. I'm going to keep this place going just by giving us a call. It's that simple. Your call now is a vote of support for the news. It's a vote for the news. 212-279-3400. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be playing a speech of Dr. Michio Kaku in the morning on health, on science. We'll also be playing the speeches of Joe Willard and others, Charlie Rangel as well. That's tomorrow morning. 212-279-3400. But please give us a call. Keep the phone calls coming in even as we move out of the studio. We need you folks, who are not ashamed to say it, as I always say, because we are codependent. We're dependent on you. And that's how it should be, so that we don't turn to the military contractors. We don't turn to the drug companies. We don't turn to any corporation. We turn to you and say, if you believe in corporate free radio, we ask you to give us a call now. That's 212-279-3400. For Jose Santiago and Paul DiRienzo, I'm Amy Goodman. Have a very good evening. Do something good for someone and call WBAI. 212-279-3400. That's a very good start. And ask for the Black Athena package. It's the Afrocentricity package that includes a taped debate on Afrocentricity, Martin Bernal's two books on Black Athena, Shakanta Jop's book, Civilization or Barbarism and Authentic Anthropology, and a very important speech by Malefe Keteyasante on Afrocentricity. Give us a call, folks. It makes the difference to us. It keeps us on the air. You keep us alive. 212-279-3400. 212-279-3400. Give us a call, folks. Pledge to WBAI Radio. 212-279-3400.
Thousands and thousands of Cuban teachers and professors have trained technicians. Also, our technicians in many fields have gone to other countries to work. Cuba was left with only 3,000 doctors out of the 6,000 it had in 1959. 3,000 left. They were incited by best salaries here in the United States. However, nowadays we have 60,000. And if one day the Americans were to need doctors, our doctors would come to work here.
Cuban President Fidel Castro, Wednesday, January 31st at 7:30 p.m. here on listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM.
Sunday, February 4th at 5 a.m., Cosmic Debris presents a radio play adaptation of Ralph Ellison's short story, Cadillac Flambe. That's Sunday, February 4th at 5 a.m.
Thousands and thousands of Cuban teachers and professors have trained technicians.
Desegregation, assimilation, separatism, nationalism. What is the legacy of integration?
There is
a great amount of integrity in what black people have created with the so-called crumbs of the white man's table. Much the same way that we created soul food, which we took the crumbs and made it a delicacy for many people. But ultimately, soul food is injurious to your arteries. And we had to figure out a new diet. The diet that we crafted in the context of white supremacy was a diet that helped us get over the hump, as it were.
Well, of course, we're never going to become identical. We are different, not only by skin color, but within skin color, within gender, within any a number of other categories. I think we got to get on with the commonalities while at the same time recognizing that we also have the right to be different in many respects.
But is that possible?
Let's find out. That's our only hope.
I agree. It's our only hope. We have no choice but to figure out how to do it together.
Listen to the legacy of integration coming to this station from Pacifica Radio.
Earlier, right?
Well, we have been
we
talking
We mentioned
about that.
It briefly, but yeah. We spent two programs on the use of condoms.
Well, I just wanted to ask one question.
Uh-huh.
Playfair has a thing he's obsessed with called the grip. You know, a vaginal exercise, you know, that...
Right, women do?
Right.
I thought you were talking about a cold. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. And it usually comes during orgasm, you know, and I was wondering... What effect that has on whether the condom stays on or not?
Well, personally, I have not experienced the grip. Let me get it out. I haven't experienced. Well,
oh God!
I haven't experienced the grip while wearing a condom. Not wearing a condom some time ago, I experienced the grip, so I really can't speak on that. I can speak on the pleasures of the grip, but not. You know, can't speak to actually what you're asking.
Half Past Three hosts Michael G. Haskins, Tony Short, The Pleasures of the Grip, and you, alternating Tuesdays at 3:30 a.m. on listener-sponsored WBAI-FM.
FM, WBAI, New York.
By best salaries here in the United States. However, nowadays we have 60,000. And if one day the Americans were to need doctors, our doctors would come to work here.
Cuban President Fidel Castro, Wednesday, January 31st at 7:30 p.m. here on listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM.
Desegregation, assimilation, separatism, nationalism. What is the legacy of integration?
There's a great amount of integrity in what black people have created with the so-called crumbs of the white man's table. Much the same way that we created soul food, which we took the crumbs and made it a delicacy for many people. But ultimately, soul food is injurious to your arteries.
And
we have to figure out a new diet. The diet that we crafted in the context of white supremacy was a diet that helped us get over the hump.
Well, of course, we're never going to become identical. We are different, not only by skin color, but within skin color, or within gender, or within any a number of other categories. I think we've got to get on with the commonalities while at the same time recognizing that we also have the right to be different in many respects.
But is that possible?
We'll find out. Let's find out.
Salim?
That's our only hope.
I agree, it's our only hope. We have no choice but to figure out how to do it together.
Listen to The Legacy of Integration, coming to this station from Pacifica Radio.
And this is radio station WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. It's time for an extended edition, a very special edition of Off the Hook. You don't want to miss this one.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get my choice, but if she could, they would. So did it bomb for the best.
And a very good evening to one and all. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, a special extended version of the program this night as we reach out and ask you for some help keeping the station going and also bring you some very important news as things are developing. We have a couple of ongoing situations. We have some updates to give to people right away. And, of course, we have some special offers as well. So I guess the best thing to do right now is to immediately get rid of some of the things that we have for you. And one of the things that we have right now is, I don't know where that phone line is coming from. I don't know which of these controls is controlling the phone line. But it's there. That many people are calling in, which is good. That's good. But let's wait until, you hear what I have to say first. Okay, we have a special deal for people calling in to get onto the internet right away. For a pledge of $100, you can get an account rather on the internet on Escape.com, and that is a donation that was given to us from Escape.com. What we're going to do now is put you on with the person in charge of that right now. Joker is here. He's going to tell you all about Escape.com. And we're going to hopefully have those five offers of 6 months on the internet snatched up for pledges of $100 at minutes. I'm told that is credit card because we were so limited on that. Credit cards only will be accepted on this one. So 212-279-3400. Joker, why would anybody want to get on the internet at this late stage in the game?
Why not? I mean, at this point, I think everybody should be on, but that's just my opinion. So basically what we're offering is a full slip PPP connection, which is unlimited, untimed access. And you're going to, first of all, you're getting it for free, $100, which is a pledge to BAI, and they could definitely use the money, and it helps out a lot around here. But if you were to compare that with AOL or CompuServe or any of the other providers out there, you'd find that for 50 hours on AOL, you're going to pay about $150. Anything more than that, I have no idea what the figures are. They've got to be astronomical because they're taking everybody's money. And it's a lot slower, which means you're going to spend a lot more time downloading stuff off the net, which means you're going to spend a lot more money. So for us, you know, you're donating here and you're getting a slip PPP connection, which is unlimited untimed access. You can access it anytime you want for as long as you want. The lines are all 28.8, supporting the fastest speed of modems. We're connected to a T1 directly to the internet, which means, again, faster speed. And included in that, you also get space to put up your own web page if you so desire. So I think it's a pretty good deal, and the money's going to a really good cause.
Well, you know, I see the phone lines lighting up. I see something like 4 lines lit up. I'm not sure if those are people that are taking advantage of that offer.
Hopefully so. If not, you know, you better hurry up because I think those will go pretty fast.
212-279-3400 is the phone number. Tell us something. How long has Escape been around for? What kind of growth have you guys seen?
A lot. It's about to get a lot bigger. We've done absolutely no advertising in the last 3 years, and we have a huge customer base, mostly by word of mouth, because people seem to be pretty satisfied with what's going on. We're doing the Home Office Expo this weekend, so that should bring in a lot more people.
And what is the Home Office Expo?
Meckler Media is doing a Home Office Internet Expo at the Javits Center this weekend, Friday through Sunday. We'll be there along with a lot of other people, so come by and check it out.
Okay, I hear phones coming in. Phone lines are ringing in the BAI studios, 212-279-3400. And by becoming a part of this at this stage in the game, you are joining the rest of us. And, you know, some people out there may already have Internet accounts. They may be asking themselves, well, why... Why should I even listen to this at this point? Joker, what is the advantage?
Well, I mean, besides the...
I guess the fact that your name is Joker should not be taken in a bad way, as you're the representative for Escape. I mean,
no joking
around here. We're very serious as far as what we are talking about here. Why does somebody want to have 2 Internet accounts?
Well, I mean, access between the two, transfers between the two. I mean, you can store files on one or the other and use different things. You can use them at the same time. I mean, most of the people that we get are either brand new people, you know, people switching over from another service as well. We get a lot of converts from AOL, CompuServe, and the like because they're just unhappy. And frankly, I don't blame them. You know, slow, hard to access, censoring users as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not making the assumption that everybody out there is trying to download child porn, but basically, if it's out there on the net, you can get it through Escape.
I see. Okay. Now, as far as censorship, now there's no censorship on Escape.
None whatsoever.
How about these other internet deals?
That AOL will kick you off and cut your account if you use, you know, a 4-letter word in the chat room.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just, you know, you're trying to limit freedom of expression, which, you know, we basically don't believe in.
Uh-huh.
Basically, we're no-nonsense access to the internet. You know, we were reviewed in Paper Magazine. You can check out the last issue. We actually got a really good review, and one of the things they said was no bells and whistles. Now, that doesn't mean that it's hard to access. Basically, it means, you know, you're not paying for all the extra crap that you get on a lot of other places that you don't even use or it's totally useless. We're providing you a direct connection to the net.
Okay, bear with me one moment while I check something out here. Hello.
You have a Tellink collect call from a county jail. The call is from Bernie S. To accept this collect call with a push-button phone, please press 2 now. Thank you for using Tellink.
Okay, well, this brings us to another part of the program, something that I was trying to lead into earlier, actually. So we're going to stop with the pitching right now because this is far more important. Bernie S., obviously, since we talked to you last, which was 3 weeks ago, you've had your hearing, and since you're calling us collect from a county jail, that means that something really bad has happened. You want to fill in the folks?
Well, the thing that happened that was really bad was that the Secret Service showed up at my hearing and made all kinds of allegations about how dangerous I must be without any kind of I could say a factual basis to say that. In any case, the judge believed him. My attorney was not able to show up, unfortunately, because we'd had a blizzard and he was snowed in. So the judge, in his wisdom, set my bail at $250,000 for what this district attorney up here referred to as a victimless misdemeanor, and I was relegated to the most dangerous wing of the Northampton County Prison, reserved for murderers and bank robbers and so forth, or for those with really high bail, such as mine. So I've been here for 3 weeks. I had another hearing Friday, which you attended, and you got to hear for yourself what the Secret Service had to say, and I'm sure you made your own conclusions.
Well, I certainly did. The conclusions I made are that this whole situation is is so bizarre, so out of control, and I'm in shock, really, because when I went to that hearing, I expected to see some exaggeration of the truth. I did not expect to see such 100% swallowing of fabrication. I mean, the question was, do you pose a threat to the community in any way? And person after person, whether or not they said that you did or you didn't, clearly proved that you did not, because nobody could come up with any kind of conclusive evidence that you ever posed a threat to anybody. And yet, despite all of that, despite all that evidence that there was no explosives found in your house, there were no guns found in your house, you never made a threat against anybody, the only thing that they thought you were a threat because of were the books that you had. The books, the reading material, things like that. And to see a judge in a court in this country actually swallow that, actually buy that, I mean, that to me was very, very depressing. Not as depressing as, of course, you being in prison, but I just can't believe this kind of thing can happen.
Well, I've learned to accept it as part of our society at this point, because this nonsense is going on for almost a year now with my case, and it doesn't seem to end, so it's not too surprising to me.
Uh-huh. So now tell us something about the conditions they put you in now.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I am in what's called D tier of this county prison, and it's reserved for the what are termed the most dangerous or violent inmates, or for those with the highest bail. And often at times that goes hand in hand. In my case, it doesn't go hand in hand. And although my bail was set at $250,000 initially, I never as much as threatened anyone in my life with any kind of violence at all. I'm a pacifist. I may read some odd things, but it doesn't mean I'm violent. In any case, I'm in a 5x8 cell, which is one of 24 on this D tier, and I'm let out of the cell twice a day to sort of roam around the tier, which is just a 120-foot long hallway that's about 6 feet wide, where I can mingle with the my fellow inmates, and then I'm also allowed out occasionally to make a phone call. Actually, it's in the same wing, so it's not really out, but and to get to the dining hall three times a day for what they refer to here as food.
Uh-huh.
I've had much better in my life, I should say.
You know,
my cell also is, while it's a single cell, there's a lot of other occupants of my cell, namely cockroaches. There's quite an infestation of cockroaches in this place. In fact, last night I managed to swat three of them crawling on me as I was trying to sleep. So it makes it a little difficult to have a peace of mind here when you've got cockroaches crawling over you and murderers are wandering around. I'm really not afraid of the other inmates here. They seem to have accepted me as someone who they don't seem to bother with. But it's an odd place to be, I'll tell you.
Now, just to recap for people who think that we're talking to a hardened criminal here, basically what happened was, to make this very brief and very understandable to people out there, a few years ago, you went to a ham fest. You parked your car illegally. The cops came. They actually broke into your car because they thought it was abandoned, and they found a tone dialer along with instructions on how to build a red box. They asked you about it. You were not under custody at any time. You were not told you were under custody. You answered the questions, and at some point, the instructions for how to make a red box disappeared. And the cops accused you of tampering with evidence. It was never proven that you took anything. You were with two other people. But because of that, you were sentenced to 2 years probation and fined something like $3,000. Am I right so far?
That's right. I was fined about $2,820, and I pled no contest, or in legal jargon, nolo contendere.
Okay, so that's the first phase of all this. Then last year, you were discovered in a parking lot with a van filled with African Americans, and of course that raised eyebrows in the community you were in, and basically people accused you of first of all partaking in a drug deal, and they found out that was not happening. They searched through your car without your permission, found crystals and electronic gear, seized that from you because they thought that was suspicious. And a couple of days later, after conferring with the Secret Service, they raided the home you were in and
arrested me at gunpoint.
Arrested you at gunpoint. This was all at the behest of the Secret Service, and they were somehow able to keep you in federal prison for 7 months.
Yes, I was initially charged On state charges, the Secret Service admitted to have drafted the original arrest warrant and search warrant. The original arrest warrant that the Secret Service drafted, which was state charges, was for theft of telecommunications services, and that charge stemmed from the Secret Service's taking one of these tone dialers and actually using it in such a manner as to be able to make a fraudulent call on a paid telephone. I was in turn charged with having done just that without any evidence that I had ever used one of these things. And that charge, subsequently the following morning, was dropped by a local judge who realized that there wasn't a shred of evidence that I'd ever used one of these things, just that I had possession of a piece of equipment that you could buy at any Radio Shack store. So that charge was dropped, and I was left with another charge of possession of equipment that could be used for petro telecommunications services. And after about 7 weeks of waiting, that charge was dropped, and the Secret Service decided to adopt the case. And I was charged with a brand new federal statute, Title 18, Section 1029, A5 and A6B, possession of hardware or software for the modification of telecommunications instruments for the unauthorized access to telecommunications services, which is a felony now under federal law, punishable by a statutory maximum of up to 15 years incarceration. Again, I was not charged or alleged to have defrauded anyone or made any fraudulent phone calls or anything of that nature, just possessing commonly available hardware or software that could be used in that manner.
Now, this seems bizarre enough that they were actually able to imprison you for something so ridiculous. The Secret Service seemed to take this real interest in making sure that you were behind bars. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But then, after you were released from prison finally in October, you immediately were able to get a full-time job. You were trying to put your life back together. You were following all the terms and conditions that were imposed upon you. But this event that took place a couple of years earlier came back to haunt you because, as you recall, we said that you were put on probation. And being arrested violated that probation, so you had to go back for a hearing to see if, in fact, you had violated the probation. Now, that in turn is bad enough, but what the Secret Service did was make absolutely sure that you were put behind bars once again by contacting your probation officer, saying that you were a menace to society. Now, your probation officer you had told me initially he thought the whole case was pretty silly, the first case that you had been arrested for, and that he didn't even want to see you every 2 weeks. He passed you on to somebody else. He had a quite different tone about him on Friday at the hearing. He seemed to think that you were one of the biggest threats to Western civilization. And I think the reason for that is because he has been contacted repeatedly by the Secret Service. In fact, you didn't see this, but outside in the hallway, he was practically swooning over this Secret Service guy. He was in awe. This was his hero. This was somebody that he wanted to be just like. This guy is like, 13 years old or something. He's a young guy. But I think when the Secret Service plows into town, everybody just kind of turns a blind eye to justice and listens to whatever it is they have to say. And in this case, they were saying, lock you up. Lock Ed Cummings up, throw away the key. Now, why are they saying this?
Well, apparently they believe that according to the federal prosecutor in my case, I ended up serving a 7-month prison sentence. Actually, the federal guidelines for the new federal charge that I was convicted of had a 0 to 6 month sentencing guideline, but since I was held without bail during the entire duration since my arrest, for 7 months, or 6 months, my sentencing was delayed another month after my guilty plea, and I ended up waiting another month. So after 7 months, they finally let me go, after having served a month more than the federal guidelines even recommended. So I was out for 3 months, and 2 weeks after I was released, I got a full-time job in my field and was working even overtime to pay off my federal fines and doing volunteer work and staying out of trouble. But after 3 months of delays of this for this probation violation hearing, finally it was rescheduled, and I made it there. My attorney had called in advance to let the court know he could not be there because of a blizzard. I managed to get there. In any case, there was some misunderstanding or deliberate misleading of my attorney by the local probation officer, who advised him he didn't believe the hearing was going to take place based on the blizzard. But apparently everyone was there waiting for me, and I was put away. So no. What was the... you would ask me another question. What was that?
Well, the question was... The main question was, why is the Secret Service so intent on locking you up?
Amongst the things that were found in my home, I'm a federally licensed ham radio operator, and I've always been interested in radio as a hobby for many years, and I have an almost insatiable curiosity about all kinds of things. Computers, electronics, radio, communications, telephone systems, law enforcement, science, the natural world, all that kind of stuff. Amongst the things that were found in my home were radio scanners, which I use in my radio hobby, frequency books such as a book called Scanner Master, which is available from a company in Massachusetts. It's a popular guide to radio frequencies. It lists everything from your local sewer authority frequency to local police, ambulance, FBI, Secret Service. It's publicly available information. I've been a subscriber to Monitoring Times magazine for, probably 15 years, and that had an article in 1983 on Ronald Reagan's Secret Service Protection Staff, and in that magazine article, it was detailed the code names that the Secret Service used to identify Reagan and his wife and his cabinet and so forth. That's very outdated information, but amongst what the Secret Service claimed was that I had code names in my hearing recently. The Secret Service alleged that I had code names used by the Secret Service for protecting the president, that I had...
But that was two presidents ago.
Oh, yeah, it was in 1983, and
it was from a magazine article. For
yes,
God's sake, what's wrong with these people?
They chose not to mention that critical fact. So
no, and you know what else?
It sounded evil.
You know what else they mentioned? Something actually Joker here wants to ask you about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bernie, I was talking to Fiber today, and he mentioned something about the C4. That you live with somebody. You want to talk about that? That it could have been C4.
Yeah, one of the things that I have a large book collection at my home, and probably about 1,000 books. I probably have 5 or 6 books on subjects that might scare people, like how explosives are made, because I've been curious about all kinds of things. I've never made any explosives, but I'd like to read about, you know, all kinds of things. So in any case, Secret Service found those books and got very upset. They called the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms, BATF, and they also went through the house. And in the basement of my house, they found... they found some kind of chemical. I'm not sure what it was.
Okay,
that's caught off in 30 seconds.
That's our 30-second warning. Are you going to be able to call us back?
I will try. I'll keep talking, and if we get cut off, I'll call right back.
Okay.
At the hearing, the Secret Service claimed that a material was found in my home that was believed to be C4, which upon later analysis turned out not to be C4, but because it might have been, I should be of grave concern to the community. So that was a claim that was made. They never said what this stuff was that they found, but apparently it was... not harmful, or I'm sure I would have been charged with it. So.
Okay, he's been cut off. Hopefully he'll be able to call us back. This is the
might,
most incredible
might have
case.
Been, I mean, it might have been silly.
And you know,
was
the thing
it
is,
or was it not?
At
it
the
wasn't.
Hearing, Tom Varney is a Secret Service agent that has been spearheading this thing. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, man, it's like looking into the face of darkness when you look at this guy. He just does not see what he is doing to people. He just wants to lock us all up because we think dangerous thoughts, we read dangerous books. This guy feels compelled every hearing to say that they thought they found C4 in the guy's house. And they say, well, it turned out not to be. So why say it at all? Reason being, C4 sticks in your mind. And the judge heard C4, this guy must be dangerous. Yeah, it wasn't C4, but it could have been.
Honestly,
turned out to be dental, the things you make... You know, to make dentures, right?
Yeah, that's what we said.
Because there was a dentist
housemate,
in the house.
Yeah, his housemate is a dentist, or was at one point.
And they don't mention this. This might be him. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Jackson.
No, I'm sorry, you got the wrong number there. I don't know where that person came from.
No, but I mean, why mention it if it wasn't that? You know,
mm-hmm.
Like, could have been dynamite, but it was a candle. I mean, what's the point if you're they don't know what it is, and it's not that, you know, you can't even bring it up.
Right.
I mean, the same thing is like talking in techno-speak and to a jury that has no idea what you're talking about and then not giving the person the chance to say what it is.
Right. I mean, at this hearing, it was not as bad as the last hearing, which I was not at and which a lot of the press people were not at. Ed was allowed to talk. Hang on, this might be him again. Good evening.
Yes.
No, there's no Mr. Jackson here. You've got the wrong number. Please don't call this number anymore. I don't know why someone all of a sudden decides that our secret line is Mr. Jackson's line.
Why is he? I mean, I'm not familiar with the laws, and why is he not allowed to speak?
You see, the first hearing, he wasn't allowed to speak because his lawyer wasn't present, and only his lawyer could speak. And because of that, he basically was silenced every time he tried to defend himself. Now, this time the press was there. A lot more people were in the courtroom. The judge had a totally different demeanor about him, but it still wound up the same way in the end. Yeah, he was kind. He lowered his bail from $250,000 to $100,000. That's a real sporting gesture here. Okay, hopefully this is him. Good evening.
Hello.
Okay.
You have a Telink collect call from a county jail. The call is from Bernie S. To accept this collect call with a push-button phone, please press 2 now. To reject this collect call, press 8 now.
Now, we're going to accept this
to
by
accept
voice.
This collect call, press 2 now. If you still wish to accept this collect call, after the tone, please say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you for using Tellink.
Stupid.
It actually worked this time.
What's wrong with this guy?
He hangs up on me when someone says yes.
Yeah, you know, it's happened a few times. You've called collect a few times. I said yes, and the guy has said your call has been rejected. Thank you very much.
You said it very distinctly.
I thought I did.
Clearly and as loud and clear with the best phonemes I've ever heard, but it doesn't catch most of the time.
Let me just say, and I apologize for having to do this, Bernie, but we are in the middle of our fundraiser. We do want to encourage people to call in and pledge to the radio station so that episodes like this, which hopefully won't occur in the future, but when they do, we'll be able to devote time to them and tell people what's going on, so that we'll be able to continue to do that. No other radio station is covering this, obviously. It's a shame if they're not, because this is something that eventually will affect every last one of us. The Secret Service is targeting people based on the books they read. 212-279-3400. Take advantage of the Escape.com offer, internet service for 6 months for pledges, credit card pledges of $100. Now, of course, we'll take any kind of pledge for whatever amount you can afford at 212-279-3400. But we really need to get some of those calls coming in. According to our tally, nobody has called, and I find it kind of hard to believe. I thought we had a full switchboard before. 212-279-3400. Being on the Internet, by the way, is the kind of thing that really makes a difference. That shows you how freedom of speech is valued, how it's so important. I mean, Joker, is that not true? The First Amendment reigns supreme on the Internet.
Yeah, but, you know, when it all comes down to it, I think if the Secret Service feels like putting you away, you're going to go away. So hopefully with more people out there trying to champion freedom of speech and getting their views out there, you know, things like this aren't going to happen, or at least when people are attacked in this manner, you know, people will sit up and take notice.
212-279-3400. Please, there's one call on the line. There really should be, not to preach to people, there really should be 7 calls on the line, because this is an important issue. By calling, you're showing your support for us talking about things like this. 212-279-3400. We could just be silent. We could just play music. We could just talk about nothing in particular, which is what a lot of a lot of people in charge want us to do. In fact, the Secret Service has called this radio station and tried to get us not to air this information. They have said they don't want us talking to Bernie S. from prison. This happened a few months ago. We can't accept that kind of control. We can't accept the kind of persecution that people like Bernie are going through right now. And by calling us now, showing your support, you're basically voting against that kind of control. 212-279-3400, 2 calls on the line. Let's add those calls up. Bernie, I know you're in a horrible position right now in prison, but tell us why you think people should call and support the radio station.
Well, as you said, Emmanuel, there aren't any other radio stations or much in the way of any kind of media covering this. If I were not personally affected by this, I'd be outraged anyway and want to get the word out. So I'm glad that someone is talking about this. I just hope nobody else has to go through the same horrible experience that I went through. I've never been accused of hurting anyone in my life, and not even stealing any phone service or committing any kind of fraud. All I had was a common hardware and software that you can obtain lots of places.
Joker.
So I just hope that no one else is subjected to this, and the more publicity we get about this case, I think the less likely the Secret Service is going to try it again.
I have another question for you, actually. We were discussing this the other day. Under the statutes that you were charged with, I believe there's something that stipulates an access device.
Well, the body of law that contains what I was charged with mm-hmm. is Title 18 of the United States Criminal Code, Section 1029, which is entitled Fraud and Related Activity Involving Access Devices. Now, an access device is defined in that law as, I'm going to paraphrase here, so I don't remember the exact definition, but it's mm-hmm. more or less it's any card, code, plate, account number, or other means of account access that you're not supposed to have. In other words, belong to somebody else.
Yeah,
it was
the question
originally drafted to target credit card fraud, that sort of thing, and then later was used for calling card codes and other illicit account numbers, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, you don't have to have the plastic to use a calling card. What we were wondering is, does a telephone book constitute an access device? Because it gives you access to numbers that, in certain situations, could be used to access things you're not supposed to. I mean, obviously, we thought it was a little ludicrous because then they'd have to go out, you know, charging everybody. But it seems like in your case, the Secret Service wants you away, and if, you know, pretty much they're doing everything in their power. So, I mean...
Well, the new amendments to Section 1029 that were added in the winter of 94, specifically Sections 1029A5 and A6B, are significant in that those sections neither involve committing fraud nor possessing access devices, which is what the title of 1029 is called. So I was not alleged to have possessed any access devices or any codes or account numbers to access anyone else's service, but merely hardware or software that can be used in other ways. So it's a gray area, but there seem to have added sections to this law that was passed along with the digital telephony bill and some other communications law benefiting law enforcement that are kind of off the beaten path, but they seem to be using it as sort of a blanket tool to prosecute people that they find undesirable, and I guess they consider me undesirable and dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously thought it was ludicrous, but it seems like, I mean, they're heaping so much on you, I'm surprised they didn't, you know, throw the book at you.
In these amendments, they also mention telephone numbers, or actually mobile identification numbers, which are basically car phone numbers or cellular
right.
phone numbers,
mm-hmm.
are mentioned as an access device.
Right. We were also, I mean, the other thing we were wondering about is, what about third-party billing? If you call a service that allows you to charge to a third number, technically, if you made up a number or used that number from a phone book, that would be considered an access device for fraudulent purposes, would it not? I mean, to the best of your knowledge, under that statute.
I think we lost him for whatever reason. I don't know exactly why we lost him. Okay, well, that was Bernie S. Hopefully he'll be able to call back in just a moment or so, and we'll be able to speak to him then. I believe we're also going to be moving on and talking about Kevin Mitnick, the story that is in the media quite a bit over the past couple of months, actually since February of 1995. The Kevin Mitnick story has been in the mass media. We reported it here on WBAI back on, I think, February 15th, when Kevin was captured. And since then, three separate books have come out. Three separate instances of journalism of various sorts. We have on the phone with us now, I hope, John Lipman. John, are you there?
I am.
Okay, great. It's quite an accomplishment, actually, with all the people running around and all the phone lines being transferred everywhere, that we actually have you there.
Great.
John Lipman, you wrote a book called The Fugitive Game, which is one of the books that has to do with Kevin Mitnick. Now, there are two others. Now, we were supposed to have all three of you on tonight, and Jeff Goodell will be joining us in just a moment. But John Markoff, who wrote the first, well, actually co-wrote the first book with Shutomo Shimomura, canceled on us at the very last moment. He basically, I'll read you what he said. We only got this about a day or so ago. I'm going to have to pass on your radio show. Bill Gates is in town in the afternoon, and I'm going to have to write about that. And to be perfectly honest, I'd rather spend the time being yelled at by Gates than Lipman. Give everyone my best. Well... So, thanks a lot, John. I could have had John Markoff, but you scared him off. Why would that happen?
Well, the funny thing is, Mr. Shimomura, of course, who is his co-author, has been sort of afraid of the story that's come out, I think largely because of not just my book, but Jeff's book also. I think both Jeff and I in our two books have compiled some pretty good evidence that the story wasn't quite as black and white as it first appeared in the New York Times. You still there, Emmanuel?
Yes, I am. So give us an example, though. What was it that was exaggerated? What was it that was not necessarily true?
Well, this story was really created by John Markoff. There was... Mr. Mitnick was put on the cover of the New York Times in July of 94. At that time, he was a probation violator, and there had been no new charges at that point. And Markoff wrote a story. Mitnick's picture was on the front page at that time, and there were all sorts of old myths that were trotted out in the New York Times.
John, I'm sorry, I just have to interrupt you for a second. We might be getting a call from Bernie S., and we do have to take that. Can you hold on one minute?
Sure.
Hello, anybody there?
You have a collect call from a county jail.
Somehow I managed to disconnect John Lippman.
Bernie S., we got cut off.
To accept this collect call with a push-button phone, please press 2 now. Thank you for using TelLink.
Hi, Bernie.
We got cut off.
Yes,
I apologize.
We did. It may have been my fault, in fact. But I've been talking with John Littman, who wrote The Fugitive Game, and I cut him off when I answered your phone call. So if you could just...
I don't mind holding.
No, don't hold. What I want you to do is keep our audience entertained while I redial him. And perhaps you and Joker could carry on the conversation.
Well, hi. How are you doing?
Hey, Joker.
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Wish you were here.
That's a horrible thing to say.
No, not really.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't wish anyone to be here, honestly.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how they could allow... I mean, I know they kept postponing and postponing and postponing your hearing before. I'm wondering, even with advance notice from your lawyer, how they could allow you to have a hearing with your lawyer not present
counsel.
And, you know, without representation, and then not allow you to speak.
Well...
Or is this a common practice?
Well, it seems to be. It seems with a probation violation hearing... the state of Pennsylvania or Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth seem to have more draconian legal systems based on old English law. Probation and parole violation hearings are actually civil law, and as a civil proceeding, one is not guaranteed the normal constitutional protections that one would expect under a criminal proceeding. So not only did my attorney advise the court that he was physically unable to make it for very good reasons, they knew about it in advance. The judge... not only didn't seem to think it was relevant that I didn't have legal counsel, he did not allow me to speak on my own behalf, and I had plenty of things I would have liked to say in response to these allegations the Secret Service was making. I was simply not permitted to speak, and I was remanded to jail on $250,000 bail.
Bottom line, what's going to happen if they nail you with this?
Well,
and what are you looking at?
The last hearing, this Friday, just 3 days ago, I was found to be in violation of my probation, which... The federal conviction for this brand new statute is a violation of this probation I was on for this misdemeanor back in 1993 of being charged with causing instruction sheets to disappear that were once in my possession. I could potentially receive up to 2 years in prison for that. The state guidelines are 0 to 3 months of incarceration for this particular thing because the state guidelines indicate that this is a misdemeanor 2 with an offense gravity score of 2. And according to the law books that I've looked up here at the law library in the prison, the only other crime in Pennsylvania that is as low as a misdemeanor 2 with an offense gravity score of 2 is insulting the flag. So
insulting the flag?
Insulting the flag, yes.
Well, nothing makes me want to tell the flag to go to hell more than what's happened to you over the past few months. So I don't know what that makes me, but that's pretty upsetting.
At my hearing, my attorney, I think you were there, Emmanuel, when he said this. He said, "Your Honor, the maximum state guideline for this offense is only 3 months. Why keep this man in prison for the until the sentencing hearing?" And,
right. Well, now
the judge said he didn't have any intention of following the state guidelines,
mm-hmm.
or he didn't feel like he was bound by them for some reason.
I hate to interrupt at this point, but our pledge line is 212-279-3400. People, please call in with your pledges so we can continue this discussion going. We are joined now by two authors. We have John Lippin back on the line with us. John, sorry for cutting you off before.
That's all right.
And Jeff Goodell. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, you're also out in California, and you also wrote a book on Kevin Mitnick. Now, I see quite a few parallels between what's happening to Bernie S. right now and what happened to Kevin Mitnick, namely the gross exaggeration. Would either one of you like to address that?
Sure. Well, just the other day, I think it's funny that that Markoff won't be on the show because it's interesting. Both he and Shimomura have recently been turning down lots of journalists. I was on All Things Considered today, and Shimomura turned down an invite to be on that show, and that's a pretty big turn down. He turned down an interview from the San Jose Mercury. Was actually on CNN yesterday, national news, and they said quite clearly that the case had been exaggerated by John Markoff in the New York Times. And, you know, Mitnick had been demonized by Markoff and Shimomura.
Uh-huh. And also by I guess, a lot of people on the net who were very paranoid about what Kevin could do and what he could not do. And it's very troubling when you see what's happening in front of you. You know the reality of the situation. People are saying things that are just patently false and untrue. Hysteria is a very easy thing to pass along. And especially, for instance, to give an example and to also bring Bernie S.'s case back into this, he was denied his probation on Friday. The newspaper headlines, what few newspaper headlines there were in the local area, what was it that they said, Bernie? Something about you continuing to commit phone fraud or something?
Yes, it's, the main headline was, judge tells phone hacker his number is permanently disconnected. And the subline was, man's probation is revoked after he continues to commit telecommunications fraud. Now, at that same hearing where this reporter was who wrote that headline and story, the Secret Service agent admitted that I was never alleged or charged to have committed any communications fraud whatsoever. Yet the headline said that not only had I done it before, that I'm doing it again. Yet that flew in the face of the fact what even the Secret Service was saying at this hearing in sworn testimony. So, yeah, I don't know whatever happened to accuracy in reporting, but currently it's a dying art.
Jeff Goodell, you with us?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, does any of this surprise you?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I just think that there's a lot of general anxiety out there about technology and what people can do with it and how it's changing our lives. And I think that a lot of that is getting funneled into people like Kevin and people like Bernie. And I think added to that, you have law enforcement who is just, you know, way behind the curve on this stuff and just doesn't know, is not able to separate things, is not, doesn't really know, you know, a modem from a Macintosh. And, you know, this is the result of stuff like that.
Now, you can say that law enforcement is kind of out of the loop on this, but then there are people in computer security, people like Tsutomu Shimomura, people who should know better. What's their excuse?
Well, I mean, I think Tsutomu was genuinely wanted to get Kevin out of his hair, you know, and I don't think that Tsutomu was responsible necessarily personally for the way this thing has been exploited and has been a long way out of proportion. I mean, he did hunt Kevin down, but he's not the one who wrote the New York Times articles, and he's not the one that gave the front page play, and he's not the one, you know, who whipped up a lot of this hysteria. I mean, he's obviously benefited from it and milked it, but it's larger than just Tsutomu.
Actually, I got to talk to Tsutomu, and I actually have a comment by him. I haven't read the entire book yet, unfortunately, and this one of the sections that I did hear about referred to a local internet provider here in New York, and he actually made some really gross characterizations about it and about people on it. One of the people that he had mentioned that were on it was Fiber Optic, and Fiber has never been on the system ever. So when I got to meet Tsutomu at the book signing, I asked him in front of a crowd of people how he could, you know, go and print something like that and how he can claim his book to be factual when such a detail as this was completely off base. And his answer to me was, oh, well, I didn't actually write that part. One of my aides was the one who researched that and put that part in.
Why doesn't he just blame Andrew Gross again? Because he seems to be responsible for everything that went wrong.
Right. I mean, but it's not. That's not the point. I mean, the point is he printed it and his name's on it. And I didn't get a straight answer from Markoff either. I asked him. I said, you know, you're a reporter for some very reputable newspapers. I mean, don't you check your sources? Don't you check your facts before you write the book?
I'd like to add to what Jeff said there a moment ago, because I think he's right that John wrote the stories, and that really did whip up the hysteria. But I think the truth is that Shimomura knew somebody was trying to get into his machines early in fall, 2 or 3 months before. And I don't think this was a case where his security was, his fantastic security was broken. I think it's starting to look more and more like there's a strong possibility that was a bait machine, and that Shimomura had a plan to turn this into something that it really wasn't. I think there's a lot of things pointing at
that. Well, there was talk of his machines being broken into the previous summer, and that was not addressed in all of the books. Now, what is
it? Well, it was addressed briefly in mine, as much as I could.
Uh-huh. Well, it certainly wasn't addressed in Takedown, was it?
No. A lot of things weren't addressed in Takedown.
Yeah, that's one of the things that the most frustrating things about that book to me is that there's so much that about that story that they both know and didn't print. I mean, you know, they just start it from the date of the break-in, and they don't go into any of the history of Tomo's relationship with Mitnick and Markov's relationship.
We have Fiber Optic joining us now.
I have a question which no one seems to be able to answer, which has been puzzling me since this whole thing began. And that question is, if Shimomura is such an expert security dude, then how come he was trusting John Gilmore's machine, Toad.com?
Well, I addressed that in my story. And obviously, if he disabled the R commands, this attack would have been impossible. And he knew he'd been poked at, and he'd been successfully attacked the summer before, and the NSA had been upset about it. And he didn't take that step. And that's why you start to wonder, maybe he didn't want his machine to be secure.
Well, I mean, that's like rule number one. Well, I guess it's rule number two, right after choosing a good password. But that second rule is never trust anybody else's host. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And there, as we know, there are tens of thousands of machines that don't trust other hosts. So that meant, on that day, contrary to what the New York Times and Markoff reported in the New York Times, there were tens of thousands of people who had better security than Tsutomu Shimomura.
He clearly was interested in you know, setting some bait to trap Kevin. I mean, there's no question that that was sort of on his mind, just based on the conversations I had with people at the Supercomputer Center about some of the other plans that they had prior to that, doing a kind of cuckoo's egg kind of ploy, which they decided to abandon at the last minute.
Well, it was a matter of honor. That's something that was brought up many, many times, that he had to right this wrong that was committed against him. And I think maybe in the process, don't you think maybe he lost sight of what it was he was actually doing by writing the story?
That's one of the big Wild West stereotypes that was given to this, that he was the guy on the white horse, and Mitnick was the guy with a black hat. And as we know, Shimomura associates with hackers who also inhabit this sort of gray area. He helped to develop some cellular software that is considered to be generally hacker cellular software. He also wrote this Berkeley packet filter program. He modified it. And as Gilmore has recently alleged in a post to Cypherpunks, you know, that could have been a far more dangerous thing than anything Mitnick ever did or might have done.
Well, I know this, that if I knew of something like that was in existence, something that that could be used for all kinds of evil purposes, I'd at least want to find out if it really existed. Is that something that's so bad to actually want to see if something evil is being developed?
No. The question that Gilmore has raised is that he helped develop the Berkeley packet filter, which is, in Gilmore's words, you know, a dangerous, actually he says it's an evil program. And it was on his machine, and he has claimed that that was one of the things that was taken by whoever broke into his machine, and we don't know for certain that Kevin Mitnick broke in. And the question that Gilmore has sort of raised is, if he was writing this dangerous program, and it was for the NSA, the intelligence agency, why was it on his machine if he didn't want to protect his machine? And I think it's a good point. Unfortunately, Mr. Shimomura isn't taking any questions.
That's interesting, too, because we contacted Shimomura. We sent him mail after John Markoff canceled and asked him if he would want to be on the show. I expected to be rejected. I didn't expect not to get any reply whatsoever. We also asked Andrew Gross, his beleaguered assistant, and at least he had the good grace to contact us and say that he couldn't do it. So, unfortunately, I really wanted this program to be a rousing debate between the different sides, but the folks from Takedown weren't up to it, I guess. I could not get anybody...
Well, they got a lot of bad press recently. The New Yorker last week had a really devastating article written by Mr. Wright. It's Hacker versus Hacker, if folks have seen that. It was a January 29 issue. And it really... I think follows on a line that I wrote about and that Jeff wrote.
Okay, we're about to lose Bernie. Yes, Bernie, there's a lot of noise coming from the prison there, so we're going to have to drop you this time.
That's okay.
All right, but keep in touch. Give us a call. By the way, your packages are not going through. They're being rejected, so find out about that.
All right.
They say they won't.
I'll call you tomorrow about that.
Yeah, they say they won't accept packages for you, so please get back to us on that.
I'll do that.
All right, good luck to you.
Good luck with the fundraising drive.
Thanks a lot. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
That's Bernie S. talking to us from prison over there in Easton, Pennsylvania. And I was there for only a few minutes. I tried to visit, actually, but they wouldn't allow that. And the place is living hell. You have people now, you know, who are guilty of nothing so much as curiosity. In fact, Bernie had to apologize before the court for his odd curiosity, in quotes. That's and it was so sad watching this, seeing this guy who I know, who everybody that is friends with him knows, didn't do anything. I mean, you know, Kevin Mitnick is you know, Al Capone compared to this guy, and I don't even think Kevin Mitnick belongs in prison. But he has not even been accused of doing anything yet. He is forced to spend time with murderers. I mean, murderers, rapists, the most.